Welcome to the UBS Energy Transition Call with NFI Group. My name is Bob, the event manager. Now, during the presentation, your lines remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on telephone. An operator will be happy to assist. I'd like to advise all parties the conference is being recorded. And now I'd like to hand over to John Wyndham. Please go ahead.
All righty. Thanks, Bob, and welcome everybody to our last installment this week of the UBS Energy Transition Call Series. So as many of you know, as regular followers in this call series, we try to connect UBS institutional investor clients with energy experts and innovative companies that are in some way enabling or driving the energy transition. Staying on a topic that we've done quite a bit of in this call series, I think we've hosted about 260 calls over since 2018 as part of this call series. Probably about 30 of them have been on the electrification of transportation one way or the other, or maybe said more precisely, moving towards zero emission transportation. So today we're very happy to have with us NFI Group to discuss zero emission buses. For reference, ticker NFI. NFI Group is a leading zero-emission and electric global bus and motor coach manufacturer, provides a comprehensive suite of mass mobility solutions. Very happy to have with us from the NFI Group, the team, Paul Soubry, who's the president and CEO, as well as Pipasu Soni, who's a CFO, and Stephen King, who's director of Treasury, Corporate Development, and IR. So this is John Wyndham. So as many of you know, I run alternative energy and environmental services here at UBS Equity Research, also joined today happily by Stephen Fisher, who runs machinery and engineering and construction equity research here. A few logistics before I turn it over to Stephen for the presentation. First, there are slides to accompany today's discussion. They were distributed via email to pre-registered participants about 15 minutes ago. Second, the format of today's call will be the normal format. It will be a presentation, an introduction presentation by the NFI Group team, followed by Q&A. Bob, who's the operator, will provide instructions on how you can log any questions on the live call after the presentation. As always, I know many of you prefer, do feel free to email me questions during the call, and I will ask them for you anonymously as time permits. So if you don't see the slides or if you have questions, best thing you can do is just email me. I'm sure most of you have my email if you found your way to this call, but it's John, J-O-N, dot Wyndham, W-I-N-D-H-A-M, at UBS.com. And then lastly, as UBS research analysts, we are required to provide certain disclosures. The full disclosures were included in the invite to this call. The short of it is this call is not a recommendation by UBS research analysts to transact in any security. A full list of disclosures is available on UBS.com. All righty, it's a nice Friday here in New England, a little cool, summer's off and running. It's been a really great month in these calls for the U.S. Energy Transition Call Series. We've hosted a lot this month. We still have two more next week, but I've really been looking forward to this one. So to Paul and the entire NFI Group team, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Stephen, why don't I kick it over to you, and I'll let you get started.
Thanks, John, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this morning on the call. As John mentioned, we'll walk through some slides quickly to start. I'm going to start on slide two, just with the mention of the cautionary statement that today's presentation will include some forward-looking statements and some non-IFRS measures. There are details in our appendices about those, and as well, you can see more information on any of our filings that are on our website. Turning to slide three, there's a few key terms that we use throughout the presentation, so just wanted to highlight those. What we call transit buses generally refers to our New Flyer and ADL business. Our motor coach business refers to MCI. Zero emission buses, which you'll hear the term a lot today, consists of our trolley electric, hydrogen fuel cell electric, and battery electric buses. So we will use the term ZEBs significantly throughout the presentation. We use the term equivalent unit, which represents one regular transit bus, and then a 60-foot transit bus is two equivalent units. That's based on our production. And we will also talk a little bit about our backlog. And our backlog has firm orders, so ones where we have an order in place. Generally, it's kind of 12 to 18 months. We'll deliver those. And then we have options, which are longer term, and we have options that go out about 5 years within our backlog. On slide four, you just get to see our photos of who will be speaking. So I'm going to turn the call over to Paul Soubry, who's our president and CEO. Then I'll speak briefly again on our zero emission program. And then we'll turn it over to Pipasu Soni, who will wrap up with our guidance and our longer-term financial outlook and capital allocation priorities. Thanks, and over to you, Paul.
Thanks, Stephen. So Paul Soubry here. I'm on slide five. The origin of our business goes back to 1930, and that's the date that New Flyer was founded. And New Flyer today is basically the core tenant of our business. Then I'll talk a bit about who we've added to the squad. And we are branded now as a broader group called NFI Group, as a leading independent bus and coach provider. And you'll see through this discussion how we've migrated from just kind of selling a bus and selling some parts to a solution provider. There's a tagline there that says leading the Zevolution. And it's our fundamental belief that transit buses, and in many cases motor coaches, transition to zero emission is not if, it's when. But the when is a very delicate discussion, and it's easy for a politician to put their hand and say by such and such a date there'll be all zero emission fleets. The reality of the capital cost, the charging or infrastructure needed, the need to source energy, whether they make it or whether it's sourced from utilities and so forth, and the fact that transit buses have a 12 to 15 year life in North America and 18 to 20 years internationally, is a dynamic where there's economic life left in transit buses that operate today. And so for the most part, we're going to see a replacement-oriented game over the next 20 years, where ultimately we'll see all of the conventional ICE buses go away and all be zero emission. The fleet then is New Flyer is the biggest part of our business. It's the market leader in North America, somewhere in the mid-40% of all transit buses. I'll talk about propulsions in a minute. NCI is North America's motor coach leader, ironically founded 2 years later in 1932. And it sells motor coaches to private operators as well as public operators, for example, you know, New Jersey, New York, Toronto, so forth. We bought a business in 2019 called Alexander Dennis, which is the world's largest double-deck transit bus manufacturer. And they are also the UK leader for all bus and coach, and sell buses in North America, in Europe, the UK, Singapore, Hong Kong, New Zealand, and so forth. ARBOC is a business we bought in 2018 based in Elkhart, Indiana, and it had a couple of things. First of all, they're smaller buses and used mostly in shuttle or small transit agency type operations, and they have both light duty, which is basically a body on chassis, or medium duty, which are integral type vehicles. So we basically have the full suite of buses and coaches, and that's all we do. We're also by far the largest provider through a brand called NFI Parts, where all of the support for our vehicles and any other competitive parts required for buses and coaches can be satisfied. I'll move to the next slide and kind of, why do we exist and where we are. At the end of the day, our products move people. And so we really focus on that concept of precious cargo. And so we've worked really hard to migrate our business, I'll talk about it in a sec, from just providing a product to providing a solution. We've been very, very deliberate in our evolution of our business to have the environment part of that strategy, because at the end of the day, one of the single largest emitters of pollution are public transit vehicles or buses or in case trucks, for example, that move throughout our cities and our countries. And so we've taken a very balanced approach to customers, their customers, shareholders, and employees for long-term success, and made a pretty conscious commitment around sustainability. We call it our sustainability pledge around a better product, a better workplace, and a better world. So I'm now on slide seven, and just some, kind of a bit of a history lesson in concept. The business grew over time. It went through two private equity flips and then a public offering in 2005, and then had three secondary offerings all the way through 2009. And so the period for us from 2010 to 2014 was really about rationalizing and optimizing our position in the North American transit space. The chapter from 2015 to 2019 was around diversification. As we saw zero emissions start to take root, and as we saw different size and shapes of buses change over time, to be able to be successful long-term, we needed scale. And we also wanted a growth opportunity, which is why we acquired Alexander Dennis. Now, Pipasu in a minute will show you the math associated with our 2020 results and how they've impacted a little bit of a drop down as a result of COVID. We're on our way back. Our backlogs are looking healthy. Our order book and our bid universes continue to be healthy, and we have some really interesting tailwinds in terms of government support. Slide 8 is just a little bit of color. Now, it would surprise most people on the phone that no two buses are alike. Part of the dynamic of public transit agencies, and to some extent private motor coach operators, is the specification provided by each unique operator is different. For example, in a year we will build roughly 200 contracts for customers, some for two buses and some for 200 buses. In any one year, not two of those orders have the same seat layout. If you change the seat layout inside a transit bus, you're changing all the mounting points on the structure, which means you're modifying the structure. By doing that, then you're changing all the stanchions, you're changing the ceiling, the air conditioning vents, the lighting, and so on and so forth. Buses have a massive degree of customization, everything about them, cameras, voice enunciation, electronic counters, different propulsion systems, different axles, window thicknesses, tints, and so forth. So what's happened with our business over time, as we've evolved now into zero-emission vehicles, is that we've gone kind of backwards and forwards. We fabricate some of our own material where we own the drawings, for example, structural components, some electrical components. We offer infrastructure solutions. One of the biggest challenges for the first early adopters of electric buses is getting their heads around what was really needed from a charging perspective. We sell, obviously, buses and coaches. We now have really come up as an industry and us leading the learning curve around how to use telematics to understand what happens in the vehicle, everything about the vehicle, in addition to the whole dynamics around state of charge and health of batteries. And finally, there's an element of aftermarket warranty and support that is a big part of our business. Slide 9 shows you kind of where we ended 2020 at $2.5 billion US in revenue. We're projecting this year and have guidance out there for 2.8 to 2.9 billion, and we are projecting growth out to 2025 at an 8% CAGR between 21 and 25. The bigger dynamic, obviously, is on the adjusted EBITDA portion of our business. We finished 2019 at around $320 million. COVID dramatically impacted our business, there is no question. We idled facilities for months. We slowly brought people back. We had customers in disarray and so forth. We have a projected guidance this year for our EBITDA of 220 to 240 and getting a 60% CAGR growth rate up to $400 to $450 million by 2025. One more slide and then I'll hand it over to Stevens. Slide 10 is very interesting. We're not like many of the, let's call them startups or people trying to enter our space. We have 105,000 buses and coaches on the road today. At the bottom of the chart there, you see we offer clean diesel and natural gas engines. In fact, 70% of what we build today are still clean diesel and natural gas, and we have order book out for the next 3 or 4 years on it. We were the first to offer natural gas, the first to offer hybrids. We do it today with BAE and with Allison. And we were the first in the marketplace with trolley electric, battery electric, and fuel cell electric, with both hydrogenics and Ballard fuel cells. Because no two operators are the same, politics, funding sources, topography, geography, traffic dynamics, and so forth, this ability to modify our facility to be able to build any kind of propulsion system on the same product lines has provided us with revenue as the industry transitions and an opportunity to win the game going forward with zero emission. We have about 450 combined years across our core companies in terms of bus and coach experience. And our very first, Stephen will take you through a bit of a timeline, but our first zero-emission vehicle was 1969 electric trolleys. And on the right there, you can see some of the statistics. Just earlier this year, we passed our 40 million miles of electric vehicle operation. And last year, 10% of our revenue was zero-emission. This year, we're projecting it to be between 20 and 25. So with that, Stephen, we're in slide 11. I'll hand it over to you to kind of give a bit of a context of how we got from there to here.
Thanks, Paul. So innovation has always been a key driver for NFI. We were the first to do low-floor buses in North America. We were the first to do natural gas buses in North America. And then you'll see here our zero-emission journey, as Paul mentioned, dates all the way back to 1969. So we've been working with electric systems for, 50-plus years. And it's been, an evolution that's continued. Our first battery electric buses were in 2012, so over 9 years of producing battery electric buses. Our fuel cell electric buses that Paul mentioned, we did a pilot for the 2010 Olympics, and then we've been making them ever since. We have a really deep relationship with Ballard. So our fuel cell expertise, we've just continued to develop. And then, as Paul mentioned to start the call, since 2015, we've really put a lot more focus on not just the vehicle, also the ancillary services that come with it. So things like telematics, reporting around vehicle performance, which has become even more important as people make the switch to zero emission. Agencies are concerned with range performance, state of charge, operator performance. And then we launched our infrastructure solutions business, which Paul discussed. And a big thing that we did in 2017 was the Vehicle Innovation Center. And this was the first of its kind. We put it in our Alabama facility. And really, it's the industry's learning center. So we've, you know, to educate politicians, agencies, operators, partners, suppliers about how to transition to electric vehicles and considerations around charging, funding, infrastructure, the various suppliers, the various components, which has been extremely successful. And we saw that that was a real need as we saw the EV transition coming. And we've had, you know, thousands of people go through that facility. Now, while we've been very, very innovative to date, we're not resting on our laurels. 2021 has been one of our busiest periods for new products, you know, that we've seen in a long time. So in January, we launched our first Level 4 automated heavy-duty electric transit bus. So there is a driver in the vehicle, but the vehicle can stop itself, drive in traffic, pull up to a bus stop. It's really interesting technology, and right now it's being used on closed courses for development and testing, but we do see longer-term applications for this. Where we do see opportunities right away, and we've also already started this in the UK, is for use in depots. So basically, the automated vehicle pulls in, the driver can get off, the vehicle can drive itself through the cleaning station, can drive itself to the fueling station, and then can park itself. And so obviously, a vehicle that can park itself takes up a lot less space. So that's a very interesting application that we're seeing immediately on the automated technology. We launched our next generation of transit buses for North America, you know, better range, lighter vehicles. We launched our medium-duty EV bus for smart, you know, smaller cities, colleges, airports, those types of markets. We're doing a battery recycling pilot, so thinking about the long-term sustainability of EVs. You know, we're thinking already about, you know, as these reach their life cycle, you know, there will need to be a battery program to recycle those components. Later this year, we're going to launch our next generation hydrogen fuel cell double deck bus for the UK market. We're in partnership with Ballard there. We've launched two electric coaches this year. We see a real opportunity here on electric coaches for public operators, so the folks that drive, you know, buses, take people from the city to suburbs. And then also employee shuttles, which is an interesting space that's developed over the past few years in the motor coach business. And that's basically groups like Facebook, Amazon, Google, Genentech. A lot of this is in San Francisco, but it's now going to Dallas and Seattle and other parts of the U.S., where they take their employees from the city and from where people live to suburban compounds and campuses. And so the EV coach makes a lot of sense for those operators and for that that use case. And then finally, we also launched this year our double-deck battery electric bus for North American market. So as you can see, very, very busy 2021. Slide 13 just shows that we do have the industry's largest, you know, widest range of zero-emission buses and coaches for North America and the UK. You see everything from a 30-foot to a 60-foot bus. These are available in battery electric, fuel cell electric. We can do long-range charging, so like overnight depot charging, or we can do rapid on-route charging. We have single-deck battery electric buses for the UK, for New Zealand. We have double-deck buses for North America, for the UK, and then fuel cell buses. So just highlighting that we've made the investments in our products, and we have these vehicles available. Slide 14, just wanted to touch on our battery technology because it's a question we get a lot, and you know, I know it's important for investors. Our approaches on battery technology vary by region, but for North America, we really like to remain cell agnostic. Obviously, cell costs, high R&D, rapidly changing technology, so we don't want to bear that risk. Instead, we prefer to be integrators of technology, and that's really our expertise, which is not easy, is to integrate various components into a bus and various suppliers' technology. And as well, by being cell agnostic, it helps us be more nimble in changes with technology. And as everybody, I'm sure, on this call knows, we've seen significant change in battery technology over the years. And so we always want to be able to provide the best and most efficient solution for our customers. Right now in America, we use Xalt batteries, which is a U.S.-based manufacturer owned by a German conglomerate, Freudenberg. They have facilities in California and Michigan. They've been a great partner. It's a heavy-duty battery. And while we don't make the cells or modules, we do assemble our own packs. And this has been very helpful in driving some cost reductions as we've been making the transition to EVs, with us being able to control the pack manufacturing, the pack installation, and the connection of those packs to other components of the vehicle. In the UK, we take a slightly different approach, where we have a very strong partnership with BYD, and BYD provide us with the electric chassis, and then we build ADL's bus body onto that chassis. Right now, we're the clear market leader in the UK with 70% plus market share in the electric space. And so that partnership with BYD has gone very, very well. And we're actually looking at strengthening that partnership again later this year by starting to make the BYD electric chassis at our facilities in the UK. So it just speaks to the strength and partnership of that partnership. Flipping to slide 15, something that's, you know, you've seen a lot in the news and even just up till yesterday, government support. And so we've seen unprecedented government support in all of our core markets for public transit. So this highlights the significant political will to not only make the transition to zero emission, but also to build back better as we come out of the pandemic. And, you know, there's billions and billions of dollars and pounds being put into public transit and specifically bus infrastructure. So we've seen this in Canada, in the U.S., and the U.K. I would say the U.K. so far, we've seen the funds hit the street probably the fastest. So we've seen awards already from some of these government programs in 2021. For Canada and the U.S., we think, you know, it's been definitely a huge boon to the industry, and transit agencies are very positive and have seen, you know, these funding announcements as a big positive, so we've started to see bid activity increase. But in terms of orders and seeing it hit kind of our deliveries, it's probably a 2022 and beyond. But all this to say, this is a long-term play here, and this is great and fantastic for our business because all of these core markets have major emissions reduction targets. You can see them along the bottom of this slide 15. They go out to 2030, 2035, and they recognize that getting people onto transit and getting transit to be zero emission will be a huge factor in them reaching those targets. So the funding is there, the will is there, the desire is there, and the agencies are excited about this, and so are we. I'll now pass it over to Pipasu, who will talk through some of our financial guidance and metrics.
All right. Hey, thanks, Stephen. I'm on slide number 16 for everyone that's following along on the presentation. So just reaffirming our guidance for revenue, we are still looking at around the $2.8 to $2.9 billion. And I'll just go through these individual pieces. As we think about adjusted EBITDA, we are still in the range of the $220 to $240 million for the full year. A couple of things that, you know, when we originally put this guidance together back in early January, before we went external with it, you know, a couple of things we saw was the private markets. We didn't expect any type of return on the private markets until 2023. We're starting to see a little bit of strength. It's starting to pick up a little bit on the private side, but at the same time, we're seeing a little bit of a mixed dynamic shift with some of the other businesses, especially on the transit side. So still kind of confirming that. We continue to, you know, navigate the supply challenges that everybody else is navigating at this stage. And, you know, as expected, we expected 2021 to be a transition year for us. And then we're starting to see that order book as we're looking at we're starting to see the bid activity starting to increase, especially on the transit side. That should kind of help us as we get into the 2022 back half. Flipping to slide number 17. We are on track for our NFI Forward savings. We continue to monitor this very diligently. And one of the things here is we were originally planning on about $65 million of savings. We are working that, and we're slightly ahead of that. And that includes things such as facility rationalization type activities that I think you may have heard from previous calls, including sourcing type activities, and looking at our supply chain that would be above and beyond what we typically do. And then this would also include other activities like consolidation of our business units, et cetera. So a lot of that has been reading out extremely well, and it's generated real costs that are coming out of our business, and that we'll really start seeing that volume leverage start to increase as we get our revenue back on track. Turning to slide number 18, as we get to slide number 18, as we think about our long-term targets, we are still on track to be that $3.9 to $4.1 billion. The ZEBs for us in our initial long-term planning session, a long-range plan, we were expecting about 35 to 40% of manufacturing revenue to be ZEBs. We still feel like that's very much so achievable, and we'll update that forecast as we kind of get through that cycle this year as well. When we think about our adjusted EBITDA, still feel very strongly that the 400 to 450 is very much so achievable. And as we kind of think more about our long-range plan this year, we may see some increases in that. But again, that's still to be determined after we get to that stage. And then return on invested capital, 12%. You know, getting back to some of the normal that we would expect as a company. So with that, I'll turn it and then the very last slide I'll kind of mention is our capital allocation priorities. So for our capital allocation priorities, a few things. So number one is we are focused very heavily on getting our leverage down to 2 to 2.5. As you know, we purchased some acquisitions right before the pandemic with ADL, and then with the private market declines during the pandemic that are recovering now. We are, you know, we're navigating a little bit more on the cash flow side, especially with our working capital and with an equity issuance that we did. So we are working to get that debt management back down to our historical levels of leverage of 2 to 2.5. We continue to really focus on that investment in highest return projects. We're starting to target on everything more of that IRR of 20% within a couple of year payback. So we're trying to get a little bit more of that return earlier. Dividends continues to be the lifeblood for our stock. One of the things are for our shareholders, and we continue to provide dividends, which we've done since 2005. For acquisitions, again, you know, in 2021, obviously, you know, our first priority, and in 2022 early, is not acquisitions unless they're opportunistic and we find something that's just such a great fit. We'll look to fund that, but you know, that would be after trying to work on our debt on our leverage reduction. And then the last one we put out there is the share repurchase, which would be more opportunistic for us. So okay, with that, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Thanks, Pastor. Look, John, we'll hand it back to you. Slide 20 really is a summary of what we've all talked about. We're a business that's leading the evolution to zero emission. We've already got the vehicles. We're already supporting them. We already have trends. Infrastructure solutions in place. Our factories are already invested. It's not like we're having to create these products, and they're built on the same production lines that allows us to be completely flexible. We're independent of the pace of adoption of zero emission buses. And look, COVID has, you know, set us back a year and a half or so. We're back. Things are looking really good from a business. The pastor talked about a bit of a transition around addressing our cost base. That's well in hand. We're pretty bullish about the future. Over to you, John.
Awesome. Thank you. Why don't we start here? Bob, can you give instructions on how participants can log in any questions, and then I'll get a kick. Me and my colleague Stephen will get a kick off for the first few.
Thank you. So your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So just to remind you, to ask a question, just key star, then one on your telephone. Thank you.
All right. So thanks for walking through sort of the COVID impact on your business. I'd like to cover the first question, the other topic du jour right now, sort of hot thing, supply chains, availability of parts, materials, availability of labor. Just talk a little bit about what you're seeing on that side, because it's obviously sort of a focus point for investors right now.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's real. You know, the irony of our journey from, let's say, March of last year to March of this year through the COVID pandemic of idling our factories and getting back up, we were really amazed at the supply chain's ability to move with us. And so we really weren't holding up production based on parts or component availability. Once we got through the end, closer to the end of COVID, let's call it February, March of this year, we still had some areas that had hot spots of suppliers of parts that had plant shutdowns and so forth. But the COVID impact on the global supply chain, whether it be freight movement or whether it be availability of microchips in damn near every part we put on a bus, has clearly had an impact on us. And so we have continued to literally weekly adapt and manage our production rates. And most of the, like, we don't buy chips directly, for example. We buy a component that has it in. And so working with our suppliers to be able to adapt it. Our guidance is, you know, wide enough for the year in our minds to be able to run inside that product performance range from an EBITDA perspective. We've not lost any work as a result of not being able to supply a bus on time. Every one of our contracts has kind of a liquidated damages type dynamic that has not, is completely immaterial, as our customers are completely understanding of how, you know, delivery on time or to schedule has been adapted based on availability of supply chains. It's going to continue to play a role through the rest of this year. And in one area, for example, in almost all cases, we make our own chassis frame and structure, so we're buying the components. In our small bus business at Arbach, we actually buy a chassis, and then we modify that chassis for a low floor configuration and put a body on it for our customers. In that case, just like every Ford 150 sitting in a field somewhere waiting for parts, we absolutely have some risk associated with delivery of those chassis to us. Immaterial in the macro scheme of our business, but no question has had an impact.
Appreciate that. Stephen, why don't I hand it over to you?
Great. Thanks very much, guys. I guess if we maybe the other topic du jour is infrastructure stimulus in the United States here. And I'm curious if you've had a chance to look at all at what some of the programs that are being proposed in this agreement, anything in there that stands out to you as you think being a benefit to you, and how generally, I guess, do you see the speed of adoption here, anything that could perhaps accelerate that adoption?
Well, it's a really good question, Steve, and again, you know, it's on the front page of every paper. There is no question that the new administration in the United States has two beliefs that are fundamental to our business. First, they believe in public transit. And so, you know, every city is different in stage and age and deployment of their fleet, but there is a commitment to ensure two things, A, to remove the emissions, and B, to remove congestion in cities. And so public transit has played a massive role in that. The second thing, all these recent announcements around, you know, the context of Build Back Better, and in the context of those two things I just talked about, have a significant impact as people transition their fleets to zero emission. Because the real sticker shock today is I need a bus that's more expensive than a diesel, and oh, by the way, I got to figure out how to get charging infrastructure into my facility. It's easy, you know, to some extent with a pilot project of or two or three buses in the corner of a garage somewhere where you got the existing power supply, you put a few chargers in, and or you put them on route and life's fine. The minute that transit agency goes to 10% of their fleet or 20 or 30 or 50%, the need for significant charging infrastructure and therefore a significant strategy of how they're going to evolve, but also where they're going to get the energy from and is it going to be reliable and cost effective is a big part of that discussion. In the United States, the vast majority of all transit agencies buy a bus, and 80% of it is paid by the federal government. And there's two conditions to get that 80%. A, they got to replace a vehicle that's 12 years old or 500,000 miles, and B, that bus must meet certain Buy American conditions in terms of physical final assembly, but also sourcing of material. And 70% of the material must be U.S. origin. So while there's been really interesting talk and announcements and so forth, it's almost a year and a half or so before that money, those announcements turn into actually money being granted by the FTA to speed up the pace of adoption. That's kind of okay because we're just coming out of the tailwind of probably a two-year cycle where many operators, most for that matter, have had pilot projects about learning electric buses, the strategy of where they're going to charge them, at depot or en route, the strategy of how they're going to adapt their facilities and so forth. So we measure a thing called the bid universe, and it does two things. It measures basically every time there's a public RFP, how many buses are out for bid, how many are firm and how many are options on multi-year contracts, and also we capture and track the publicly reported fleet replacement plans of every transit agency. Both our active number of bids on the street is up, and our long-term fleet replacement plan continues to be up, which is supported, as Stephen said before, about the availability of money. The bills that are going through today, you know, generically, are almost five times the amount of money for zero-emission type vehicles and infrastructure that they were 2 years ago. And so that kind of magnitude will definitely help the pace of adoption. But remember, if you and I were running a transit agency in a certain city and our buses are average 7 years old, we are not going to pull those buses off the road tomorrow and try and replace them with zero emission because we don't have the capital, but also because there's economic life still left in that vehicle. So what we're going to do is really manage the transition out of my existing fleet and in with the new fleet over a longer period of time, which bodes well for us because we're the only company in the industry that can do diesel, natural gas, hybrid, and all these versions of zero emission. And so our ability to adapt with an operator is absolutely fundamental. Simple example, New York City. We have diesel, natural gas, hybrid, and electric Excelsior, all on the same bus platform, same manual, same spare part, same training, and helping New York City transition their fleet. Sorry for the long answer, but a little context.
And Stephen, just quickly on the bipartisan announcement yesterday, I mean, it's definitely still early days and digesting it all, but there was $49 billion in there for public transit, and they also referenced $7.5 billion specifically for making school and electric transit buses. So again, to Paul's point, you know, we'll see how it all rolls out, but just further support, I think, from both sides, Republican and Democrats, for public transit and for EV transit.
That's great. Thank you both. Wanted to follow up on your comments about the value add that you have in being able to accommodate all the different requirements and the regulations and the requests that come in from all the different various agencies that are ordering your vehicles and the tailoring that has to go on. As there are companies that try and take a different approach to this, and it seems like through perhaps offering a more generic product, perhaps, at the trade-off of offering a lower price, what do you think the chances are that some of the customer base realizes, you know what, maybe a lower priced product and a more basic product that's less tailored could actually work in the context of, you know, budgetary constraints? And if that becomes more of a standard procedure, how hard would it be for you guys to transition to a model that, you know, enables you to offer, you know, a lower cost structure and thus a lower price?
It's a really good question. I've been here 13 years, and my original surprise, if you will, of the degree of customization, silly example, in the last 5 years, we've offered buses with 57 different part numbers for defroster fans because every bloody customer has their own view on that kind of stuff. So we have this massive engineering and supply chain infrastructure to allow for accommodation and creativity and adaptation of all these crazy requests. Now, if we were selling to commercial businesses, which is maybe about 15% of our business, where the trade-off between capital, operating costs, energy, and so forth is fluid, that's one thing. We're dealing with public transit agencies and that are governed by city councils that have a four-year kind of life. And so the ability to make change and impact inside a very short window is really what those, you know, agencies are worked for, which is why the customization is so high. The other dynamic is the organized labor, the union dynamics associated with drivers and maintainers and so forth. Back to my 13 years here, when I started, I was just amazed at the variation. We started a reference bus that if a transit agency said to us, we got to move this people and this weather and here's how many we need to move and how far, what would the bus look like? We created reference buses, which would be the optimized vehicle that you kind of referred to. We've never sold a reference bus. In fact, about 9% of the components in our bill of materials comes from our reference vision. And that's because every city and state has their own dynamic around the local politics, like redesign the dash area because the union in New Jersey voted to move the cup holder to the left side. That's the reality of our type of customer. And so the other dynamic is what we call colors and buckets of money. If we're running a private company, we'll move capital decisions and operating decisions and off-balance sheet decisions and leasing decisions and so forth to do the right long-term thing. Buckets of money refers to the different types of budgets, so capital in a city or operating or fuel budgets and so forth. The money isn't as malleable across those buckets. And then you have colors of money. A bus is paid for by city money, in some cases state or provincial money, and federal money. And that money doesn't flow. And so we're absolutely, there is a potential that somebody shows up with a standard bus and says it's cheaper, how many do you want? I go back to the fact that last year we delivered 200 orders with not two seam seat layouts. Could it change? Maybe. If it does change, then those 250 engineers I've got here that do nothing but customize every single vehicle, I don't need. The other dynamic then is I don't need the massive supply chain and variability in my sourcing as well as my afterpart business. And I can go back to my reference bus, which we've spent a lot of time thinking about if we could make all the choices. So we're trying to play, if you will, the current game, and we're also ready for if the game changes the way the customer thinks about buying a vehicle. We can't underestimate or take for granted what some of these new guys are trying to do. I'll point to one of our competitors that, you know, just went through a de-SPACing process that's been around for 16 or 18 years, who showed up with a standard vehicle, and they've got 500 vehicles on the road in 18 years. Right, the pace of acceptance based on the nature of our customers has been nowhere near their expectation.
Really helpful. John, should we ask Bob if there are any questions coming in on the lines?
Perfect, Bob.
Thank you. No questions in the queue just for the moment. So just to remind you, to ask a question, just key star then one on your telephone. So to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone. Thank you.
I can ask a couple more here. So you guys mentioned that one of the unique angles that you offer is that you can provide a range of different types of fueling structures for vehicles, be it electric, hydrogen, hybrid, natural gas, et cetera. Do you guys have a vision for what the industry will look like, let's say, exiting this decade? What are the kind of adoption rates going to be? Which technologies are really going to take hold? What that mix might be?
It's a super question. So, you know, we had a crystal ball. Based on the way we see the game evolving, remember, we watched the movie to go from diesel and some go to natural gas and then the hybrid phenomena and so forth. A hydrogen fuel cell vehicle is an electric vehicle. The only difference is it has a fuel cell on it now that actually acts as a range extender. So, you know, rough order of magnitude, a bus we sell to LA Metro today that has a certain, you know, level of batteries on it, 40-foot bus can go, you know, 225 to 250 miles with a single charge. A bus we sell to Orange County today that has a smaller battery pack but has a hydrogen fuel cell can go 350 miles. The average diesel bus and natural gas bus is designed based on their fuel capacity to do about 350 miles. So our view is that there is no one-size-fits-all. And again, topography, geography, temperature has a massive impact. For example, we got 5 buses in Manhattan today going across the island. There's chargers at either end of the island. The bus goes back and forth. That bus moves 2.9 to 3.9 miles an hour. Now, you know, COVID notwithstanding, in a normal day. 65% of the energy off the crazy batteries goes to heat and cool the bloody bus, not physically move the bus. So in that environment, a fuel cell vehicle that might have a very different range profile might be a better choice. Our view is by 2025, 2026, we may see 40 to 50% of what's delivered being a zero emission vehicle. There is no question, you know, in my lifetime, by the end of my lifetime, they're going to be all zero emission. We think by the end of the decade, that might be 60 or 70%. Remember, too, if you and I ran a transit agency and we took 80% of the capital costs from the federal government to buy a diesel bus 5 years ago, if I pull that bus off the road early, I've got to pay back the STA pro rata what was unused portion of that asset. So imagine going to the city council and say, hey, I need more money for a zero emission. I need more money for chargers. And oh, by the way, I need money to pay back to the FTA. There's economic life. And because of the way those buses are funded, there really is no used market for buses. Why would we ever buy a used bus when they get 80% from the federal government? So there's quite a significant impact, which is why we call it an evolutionary story, not a revolution. Long way to say, zero emission battery electric is going to be the game. There are certain environments like, you know, Seattle, Vancouver, wherever, where they have overhead wires, where they may continue to use that as their energy source and use electric trolley. We're kind of the only ones that do that in North America today. Fuel cell is going to have its role. And so maybe, I'll guess, but maybe, you know, 10, 15 years from now, if 80 to 85% are battery electric, maybe, you know, 15% that are fuel cell electric based on some of those unique operating things. The other dynamic is that we're really surprised at the pace of interest for private motor coach operators in zero emission. And as Stephen talked before, you know, the Bay Area, we are currently, you know, demoing and taking orders for zero emission electric coaches today based on battery electric, but they're all asking about fuel cell. And so we may start to see as the hydrogen network across the U.S. grows and the trucking market to some extent takes advantage, that may have an impact on the over-the-road motor coach type dynamic as well. So, you know, short and sweet, one size doesn't fit all. You know, 80-plus percent of it are going to be battery. There's going to be a role for fuel cell. And there, it is going to be an evolutionary story, not tomorrow everything goes battery electric. Here's the other dynamic. Depending on where you are in the country, you may or may not have a ready source of electricity that's reliable and cost effective. So the whole strategy of how you adapt that into your fleet and where the energy comes from is just as important, if not more important, than the vehicle you choose and how you choose to charge it.
Super helpful. I'll just ask one more here and then turn it back to John. I guess you've talked about a lot of different aspects of the company, you're in a lot of different regions, a lot of very unique products. If you had to kind of step back for a second and talk about what do you think the biggest and most confident growth opportunity that you have for the company over the next few years, what would they be? Is it more the volume recovery? Is it pricing? Is it existing products versus new products? You've got the NFI Forward, so is it margins? How would you summarize what you're most excited about?
Well, that's really relevant. Look, NFI Forward was, business was ticking along. We put a bunch of businesses together under this umbrella of Bus and Coach, but they were operating really as independent businesses. We had ultimately always wanted to figure out how to pivot from a little bit of a hold co of bus companies to an integrated company where we're leveraging scale, cost, sourcing, technology, and so forth. You know, the punch in the gut of COVID forced us to pull that a little bit earlier in our strat plan. And so that was really about adjusting our cost base to the economic realities as well as the ability to integrate and leverage across the business. So that's really, really prominent and relevant in our current strategy. And as Papasu said, we're ahead of schedule on a, you know, a $65 to $67 million overhead takeout by the end of next year. The second issue is the market is coming back. As I said, the number of bids we're seeing, both firm and options and so forth, the funding Stephen talked about is really encouraging about the recovery of the market back to, you know, pre-pandemic levels and maybe even a little ahead of pre-pandemic levels based on the size of that funding. The other issue is because it's an evolutionary game, and again, you and I are running a transit agency, it's not like the light switches and we go from a conventional typewriter to an electric typewriter overnight. We have so many things that have to happen, the charging, the physical depot implications, the en route charging, the energy, and so forth. I still got to run my railroad or my transit agency as this game happens, and I got to phase out my fleet that I have people trained for and I have parts and all this other stuff. More than anybody in the industry, we have something like 250 field service people on the road that can help fix their diesel bus, their hybrids, their natural gas, or now their electric vehicle or support them. And that's not trivial when you're talking about a transit agency all day long is worried about pullout and moving people. Lots of people get concerned about ridership. Hey, now that COVID's told us everybody can work from home, nobody's going to use public transit anymore. I don't believe that. I believe we're going to see people back. We're seeing it already in the United States. We're starting to see it in Canada. In Hong Kong, Singapore, they're back to 100% ridership levels. The UK, London is back to 80 or 90% ridership levels. The provinces in the UK are kind of at the 60 to 70%. Sure, they may, you know, we may see more work from home. even our customers like Facebook, Apple, and Google are saying, we may not build as many new facilities anymore, but we're not sending everybody home. We're going to be bringing our employees to work. And if ridership goes from, you know, I'll make it up, 52 people on a bus to 48, because it's a public service, that vehicle is still going to operate, and they're still going to need that quality vehicle and transition to zero emission. So, you know, look, I'm really bullish on where we are from a propulsion agnostic, from a field service and relationship with our customers and transition expertise. We haven't dove too deep or made bets on any one battery technology or whatever. We've chosen to be smart buyers and integrators of key technologies rather than deeply invested in our own battery factories. Battery prices, as we all know, have dropped, you know, 80% in the last 5 years. They're going to continue to go down. Building battery factories when in some of our markets we may see solid state in the next 5-7 years take, there's lots of stuff that says be the best optimizer and integrator. And because our volumes are, you know, 6,000-7,000 units a year, it's not automotive where there are billions of units or, you know, millions of units. The other thing is, these vehicles are not, because of the customization, they're not built in a cell with a robotics. Massive customization that is all hand labor built. And so that may change over time with some standardization. Our ability to be flexible on that front and to be the market leader today, not only in conventional vehicles, but our win rate and market share on zero emission is higher than our current conventional. We're in a good place. We got to execute.
Sounds great.
Perfect. Thanks for that. Sorry, Steve.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks. That answer ties right in to some of the emailed questions we've got, and maybe we'll go through those sort of quickly in sort of the lightning round, if you would. Especially tying into your last comment there, investor asking, how does the margin profile compare for zero emission buses versus conventional? You make more money selling, you know, 100 zero emission than conventional, or is the financial opportunity more tied to auxiliary revenues around infrastructure data, et cetera?
Absolutely great question. Historically, we build the structure, we design to build the structure, we make the Christmas tree, and these customers tell us all the ornaments to put on the Christmas tree, and we buy them and we integrate them. So the ability to market up, and the way our industry works because of the degree of customization is we basically come up with costed bill of materials based on unique specs, and then we put a targeted dollar margin on them, and we bid and we adjust that based for the customer dynamic. Going forward now with zero emission, we have opportunities to make margin where I never made before. For example, there's only one engine certified for a transit bus in the United States, and that's Cummins. So the price from Cummins is the price. The cost of all the spare parts are the cost. There is no, you know, the volume doesn't give me any benefit and so forth. In a zero emission world, I now have flexibility of where I buy my cells from, who packages them, what battery management system I put on them, who builds the actual pack that goes into the vehicle. By the way, we do. We design and build our own, we call it a juice box, but effectively container. So we have margin opportunities now in a zero emission we never had in the old model where we only were putting other people's stuff on our vehicle. And we now have, let's call it sourcing leverage, because now as just a conventional New Flyer business, it was just X transit buses a year. And now that we're in zero emission, I have transit buses, I have shuttle buses, I have motor coaches, and a global dynamic. No longer do I have to worry about emission standards in Canada versus emissions in the U.S. versus emissions in the U.K. There is no emissions on a zero emission. And so I can now have a global strategy around how these vehicles are designed, sourced, and built together. The only real restriction I got is some of these Buy America or local dynamics. So that's the dynamics. The margin so far on zero emission, again, it's a small part of our business. Last year it was 10% of our revenue. This year we think it'll get to 20%. The original projects between, let's call it 2015 and 2020, were science projects. You know, five here, two there, three there. Who really knew what the margin was going to be? So far, what we're seeing is the margin on zero emission is better than the conventional margins as we start to get contracts for 20, 30, or 50 zero emission vehicles. And I go back to our ability now to participate in some of the supply chain or sourcing dynamics I never could before.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Next question we got, a little bit different topic. We're seeing an increasing number of municipalities install wireless charging as part of their overall charging solution. Can you provide context in regards to how you view wireless charging? Thanks.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot, quite honestly. We looked at it originally. I can tell you in 2015, everybody thought we were going to have chargers all over the place. We'd put small batteries on a bus, and you'd start to move your vehicles en route and you'd charge them and life would be fine. As operators started to understand the challenges of putting whether it's a wireless charge in the ground or whether it's a catenary charge en route, it's expensive. Just silly example, to put those two charges in Manhattan, 9 months of civic approvals and 13 different agencies in the city had to sign off on it. Not easy. By the way, New York has 6,000 buses and this was for five of them. So what's happened now is the pressure is put back to how do we optimize the depot level charging so you minimize what charging needs to be done in the field, which then is design of the bus, weight of the bus, energy density, battery capacity, and all those kinds of things. The original performance of wireless chargers, as I understand it, they were nowhere near charging as fast as what we saw in catenary or depot level chargers. The other dynamic is the cost to install wireless charging is not trivial in terms of digging up roads and highways and whatever else to put that in place. It has a role, it has a place. In our roadmap, we don't see it as a massive portion of the market.
Perfect, thank you. And then maybe a little bit along the same theme, investor asking about compressed natural gas and RNG, renewable natural gas, how you think that plays into the long-term structure of fuel source for you.
There is an awful lot of installed base of natural gas vehicles. And where customers, you know, we see very few small operators have a mixed fleet of diesel and natural gas. They may have diesel and hybrids because they can fuel them the same way. The minute you put natural gas in your fleet, you not only have a different fueling infrastructure, but now you've got all kinds of other dynamics associated with your depots and your maintenance garage and the air scrubbers and the sniffers and explosion proof and insurance and all those other things. So the guys that bet on or invested, if you will, in natural gas are big guys, New York, LA, Chicago, Dallas, blah, blah, blah. Those guys have significant infrastructures today and significant fleets. Whether they'll keep some of that stuff is to largely dependent on what we'll see from government regulation. They're well invested. They will go zero emission as well. In California, the push for not low emission, but zero emission is far stronger than anywhere else today. Who follows and at what pace? Not sure. But natural gas will continue to play a prominent role in our minds through at least the next decade.
Perfect. And with that, we have exactly 1 minute left, so we will start to wrap up. I guess first and foremost, thank you so much to the entire NFI group participants for coming and sharing the your story here today. Before I pass it back over to Paul for any closing comments, thank you to my colleague Stephen Fisher for being here today, as well as Bob, the operator, as well as all the investors for the questions. Really appreciate your participation today. As a quick advertisement, we have two more calls in the June UBS Energy Transition call series. They're next Tuesday and Wednesday at 11 a.m. One's on wind and solar engineering, procurement, and construction. The other one's on solar development on Wednesday. If you need links to those calls, please do email. They're obviously sort of very happy to have those calls next week. Really going to dive into the impact of some of these freight, polysilicon restrictions, higher steel prices, what actual private operators and developers of projects are actually seeing and doing in response to that. So please do join us for those calls. And with that, Paul, wish you a fantastic weekend. The final word is yours.
Well, look, thanks, John, Stephen, and crew and investors for joining us. Hopefully we've tweaked your interest a little bit in our business. We're in a good place. We've got a lot of work to be done from a recovery from a COVID supply chain dynamics. We're not having to create product or create facilities. We're able to transition with our customers and we're in a really, really good place from a technology perspective, a track record perspective, a deployed fleet, a deployed teams in the field. It's going to be fascinating the next, the last five have been incredible. The next five, it's going to be fascinating, the pace of adoption. The good news is that governments now are stepping up, not just with words, but with money to help this evolution, if you will, or this evolution to zero emission vehicles. We're pretty excited to be part of it. Watch for NFI.
Thank you. So that concludes our conference call for today. You may now disconnect, and thank you for joining.